Gretchen.
Hey, Gretchen, how are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I am good. Okay, it is straight up noon, and I am going to start the recording, and today is Friday, November 16th, if you can believe it, and this is the noon Eastern Time PSS group, and today we're going to be talking about parenting positively, which is so fabulous. But first, let's do some check-ins and some celebrations. So we're going to go around, and I want everybody to tell me something fabulous that's been happening in the past 2 weeks. It can be something that you may consider to be a small fabulous, or it can be a giant fabulous, whatever is top of mind for you. And then also tell us where you are in the world and just a little bit about the child that brought you to us. And so let's see. So, for example, I would say I am celebrating the fact that my son was in a play last weekend, and he did a great job. And he's my son with autism, and it's difficult for him to be in, different environments, and he really just did fabulous. I live in Kansas City, and I already told you a little bit about Theo. He has high-functioning autism and ADHD, but I also have two other children who have ADHD, and I am an adult with ADHD. And so whoever wants to go next, just follow that path.
I can go,
okay.
Gretchen.
Go for it.
Yeah. So I live in Atlanta, Georgia. I have one child. I have a six-year-old son who is six and has autism, like high-functioning autism. My celebration is small but huge. And we had a play date last weekend, and those just usually don't go well. And, you know, even if it's someone we know, I think my son gets, like, shy, quote unquote, like he just gets really uncomfortable and things kind of fall apart. But we had a friend over from school and it went like so well. And, you know, at the end of the weekend, I was like, hey, you know, out of all the stuff we did, like, what was your favorite part of the weekend? And he was like, my play date. And it,
aww.
I don't know, I was just really happy. So
that's awesome. That's really, really awesome. Very cool. And that is huge. I think that's huge on all spectrums. Incredible. Cool. Thank you for sharing that. Who wants to go next?
I'll go. This is Lisa.
Hey, Lisa.
I have an 11-year-old son with ADHD, and we live in Maryland. And I guess this week something positive that happened is he's been in therapy since probably the beginning of the summer, and we actually ended up having to switch therapists, but he's starting to open up to her, which has been a huge thing. And in her words, he's a tough nut to crack and doesn't really talk too much about how he feels or what he's thinking, but little by little, he had a appointment yesterday, and she told me he's starting to open up a little bit, so she's starting to get a little bit of insight on what's going on inside his head and how he's feeling, so I'm feeling pretty positive about that.
So cool. Who's next?
I'll go. This is Mary. I live in Tulsa. My daughter is 9 with ADHD, and I would say that homework has gotten so much better. It's never easy, but it's a lot better, and I think some of it came down to letting her just pick where she does it instead of where everybody says you should have just a consistent spot. And she has been more effective if she does her reading in her room, and she does some of her other work on the sofa in the living room, and sometimes she's in the kitchen, and I think that's maybe helping her to feel like it's a little bit less intense to just mm-hmm. sit in one place for, you know, half an hour, 45 minutes to do her homework. And so she has embraced it a little bit more. And then we've just been trying to be consistent about the time
mm-hmm.
And the day that we do homework rather than the place and the means that we do it. So we're making a lot of progress on homework.
That's great. Isn't that cool? I mean, there's just something about structure that our kids need.
Yeah.
And the,
it's like structure,
you know,
but flexibility at the same time.
Yes, exactly. It works until it doesn't. You know, sometimes we chafe against structure, and then when everything falls apart, we really embrace structure.
Yeah.
That's perfect.
Yeah.
Thank you. We have a lot of people on today's call, guys. This is awesome. Holy moly. Okay. Celebrations. So if you haven't gone yet, please jump on in and share your name and where you are in the world, and then a celebration, something that's been going well over the past couple of weeks, and then tell us a little bit about the child that brought you to us. And you don't necessarily have to go in that order. That's just the order I remember them in.
I'll go. My name's Jane, and I was in the group a year or so ago, and now I'm back. And
welcome back.
Thank you. That's kind of what I want to celebrate, because things have not been going well, and so I guess I couldn't think of a celebration, but then it all of a sudden occurred to me that joining the parent support system group again is cause to celebrate. And
absolutely.
My son's 18 and has ADHD and learning disabilities and depression and some things. So I live in Maryland, and that's my story.
Cool. Welcome back.
Thank you.
I love that. Yeah. Sometimes just taking the time to join this group is absolutely a celebration, because I know that the weeks can be rough.
Thanks.
Yeah. All right. I'm showing that we have like two more. Whoa. Oh, mute. Somebody mute. Who is that? All right.
That could be me. I'll go. Oh. This is Debbie. I'm in Seattle. I'm celebrating. I had my son's conference with this teacher last night, and nothing ADHD related came up at all.
Really?
Which surprised me. Nothing.
That's awesome.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know if it's because I think it's because I've been so proactive. There wasn't really anything to address, and she met him where he is. And and I think also, you know, he's only in fourth grade. So I think we've kind of caught it where he's, you know, his potential to derail. I feel like we were heading it off, and I've worked a lot on his nutrition and educating the system around him. And so I don't think she felt the need either to express any of that stuff, or he's really doing okay right now.
Let's go with that.
Yeah.
In the absence of additional information, then we're going to assume best intentions, and he's doing great right now.
Yeah.
Fabulous.
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to put you on mute now.
Okay, cool. I show that we have one more person who hasn't gone yet, but I can't tell who it is. So if you haven't gone yet, jump in. And if you're trying to talk right now, you're on mute and we can't hear you. Did everybody go?
Yep.
All righty. Well, let's move on then. So if you have the manual in front of you or nearby, we are on page 26, Parenting Positively. If you don't have it handy, not a big deal at all, because this is one of our critical response areas. And I think everyone's familiar with the term Parenting Positively, but it's really, for us, it's the cornerstone of everything that we do. You know, our kids get so many negative messages every day, every hour of every day, that underneath our parent action model is parenting positively. Parenting positively and parent self-care are probably the two most important things that we're going to talk about over the course of the year. But, you know, when we think about ways that we approach our kids and the things that we say to our kids, we really have to figure out a way to come from a place of optimism and support and love and helping them build on their strengths. And so before we get too far into the lesson for the day, if you will, we're going to go back around and take aim. And remember, you're taking aim on the change you want to see. And it can be something small. It can be something big. It can be kid-related. It can be you-related. It can be whatever it is. So taking aim on the change that you want to see helps us kind of distill down what we're going to be focusing on for the next 45 minutes or so. Who wants to go first?
I will. Jane. And
okay.
I would like
Jane.
To take aim. I'm not quite sure if I remember how to do this correctly, but
I
like
think you probably do.
On not having anger and fear rule everything that I do, so I don't parent positively because of
that.
Say
that again.
Change having anger and my thoughts so that I can parent positively instead of being angry about everything that's happening. Because I've lost optimism. Pardon me?
I was going to ask you a clarifying question if I could, but go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, clarifying question's good.
Okay. Is it, when you're thinking about anger, are you trying to not get triggered or to handle when you get triggered differently?
Yes, definitely.
Okay. And is it in a specific situation that you find yourself getting triggered the most?
Yes, definitely. Okay. With not sleeping.
With not sleeping. Okay.
Yes.
Do you want to take aim on? Yeah.
Being triggered that he's not sleeping the entire night long, and then I have that feeling of going from there to failing classes, not
catastrophizing
getting my diploma, and not being successful in life. And I can't see any way out of that. So the anger just hits me.
So I'm wondering if it's more about catastrophizing than it is about getting triggered.
Yeah,
but I'm
very
know
good at that.
Suss that out. Yeah, well, we all are. I mean, you know, that's it. It's all fear, right? I mean, we all have pretty much everything leads to, not everything, but, almost everyone I work with, the fear is, you know, he or she is going to fail at this, and then they're going to fail at everything, and they're going to live in my house for the rest of their lives.
Or have a cardboard sign out on the street.
Yeah.
And live in the
woods. Exactly. Right. Yeah. That's taking it even a step farther. You're right. And that's completely normal for parents of kids who have ADHD and other special needs to catastrophize and go to that place. But we're going to work through that. Cool. Who else wants to take aim?
So what was I taking aim now? What was the final way to word that in my mind?
To me, it sounds like you're taking aim on catastrophizing, specifically around sleep.
Okay.
But if that's not resonating for you, you want to take aim on getting
triggered?
Well,
do you say, I don't know how to word it, like, okay, this week I will not catastrophize, or I'm not, that's where I'm stuck on how you take aim and then follow through.
So that's an action step. So right now we're just kind of focusing or trying to figure out specifically what area we want to focus on or take aim on.
Okay.
We're not putting any structures or systems in place. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you tell me what words resonate for you?
Well, catastrophizing and being triggered by issues.
Okay. Cool.
All right. Thanks.
That'll work. Yeah, of course. Who's next?
I can go. This is Debbie. I'm going to take aim on zooming out. I feel like I've been in the weeds doing a whole bunch of stuff, and now I need to kind of slow down and zoom out and just let the sand settle.
Okay. And what's your typical challenge with that?
I love
allowing
progress.
Yourself to zoom out.
Yeah. I love progress.
You need something measurable.
And I just love pushing things forward. I move faster than the, than the system. My own cadence is pretty fast. And I feel like, again, my son's in a really good space for me to zoom out and settle in and an anchor before pushing on to the next thing and not feeling the positive impact of where we've gotten to date.
Yeah. Okay.
So zooming out is very hard for me. I'm a into the details kind of person.
Mm. Is there a way to see zooming out and status quo as a place of action for you?
Yes.
Okay. Good. Who's next?
I can go. It's Gretchen. I feel like this ties into parenting positively and tone of the home. And specifically, it's like my tone of voice and or like initial reaction to things. And so I feel like I do this thing where, you know, I want to redirect my son.
Mm-hmm.
And I like kind of snap and I'm like, stop, you know, doing that. And it's just like, and sometimes I just kind of like not yell, but just kind of like bark at him. And he's, you know, he's like, I'm sorry, you know, and like at the end of the day, I'm like, none of this is that important. You know what I mean? Like, unless it's like a safety issue or something, I just feel like I tend to overreact in this really negative way instead of just being like redirecting in a positive way. And I noticed myself doing that more recently, now that I've started to think about it. But it feels like it's still my MO. Like, it's like my gut reaction to kind of react that way. So I definitely would like to be more deliberate about it and kind of focus on like having a better sort of, it's really just like tone, you know, where I'm like, I can just say this and people wouldn't like look at me and think I'm angry about it, you know, like, and I'm not really, it's not that big of a deal. So.
I'm curious think back to a situation when that's happened recently and tell me kind of how you're feeling. Is it annoyance? Is it anger? Is it just forcefulness?
I think it's a little bit of annoyance. And I think it just feels like there are like 1,000 little things. Do you know what I mean? And I'm like, oh, but, you know, I'm thinking of an incident where like, you know, something fell out of a cupboard and, you know, like my son knocked it out and it didn't matter. It didn't break anything. It was like a bag of raisins, you know, and like,
right.
I just kind of like picked that up, you know, and I'm like, why would, it just wasn't necessary, you know? And I feel like I like the magnitude and like the tone of how I'm reacting just feels, it feels far more negative than I want it to be, one. And then I just feel like it's far more negative than I even feel about it. And I guess, yeah, my feeling is one of like, you know, where and maybe it's because, you know, I've said, put on your pants 900 times like before that, you know, and I'm not sure. Maybe there's like something triggering me and then, you know, it's like the raisins like push me over the edge. But yeah, I just feel that way. And I sort of like look at myself and I'm like, gosh, like I sound a lot harsher than I mean it, I think.
Okay. And so I'm wondering, is it more about self-care for you and where you are at that point in the day?
Could be, but I think it's, yes, I think that's a piece of it. And then I think a piece of it is like, that's how I was raised, you know, and that's how my family works and, you know, everything's just right. And I like, you know, when things get like knocked out of place, like it's bothers people, you know, and I'm just like, I'm not that focused on it, but I think that that's like where I go to. I think a piece of it is probably, you know, if I slept great every night and, you know, like I'd probably be a little less volatile about it, but I don't think it would go away entirely. So I think it's like a contributing factor, but not the whole story.
Okay. Fair enough. Cool. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Who else is out there that hasn't gone yet?
I can go. This is Lisa.
Cool.
The self-care that you were just talking about is definitely something that I want to take aim on. It's just, I'm a single mom and don't have any extended family around. So it's just my son and I pretty much all the time, every day, every night. And I feel like if I could take a little bit more time for myself and he could also, you know, have a break from me, that it would be easier to parent more positively. So that's what I want to take aim on. this week anyway.
Yeah. No, I completely understand. Is there a way to take a break without him physically leaving the house, or you physically leaving the house?
It's difficult. We're in an apartment, so it's really, we don't have a lot of space. I mean, I could definitely schedule some time, you know, so that we're, I guess, in doing different activities, I guess. But it would be definitely, I think part of it is too, like, being cooped up inside all the time is part of my, it's like, it really, after a while, gets to me, you know, like, I need to get out of here. So I'm researching maybe having, like, a babysitter or somebody come over so that maybe at least once a month I could get out of the house and spend some time with my friends, you know, some other adults. So I really think that would help out a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
Okay, I lost track. Is that everyone? Yeah.
Still have to go.
Okay, go.
Okay, this is Mary. I'm going to take aim on, I guess, conversations with my daughter. If we say something to her or ask her something or, you know, any of those things, she usually once or twice a day, she'll have the response that if you told her to do something she doesn't want to do, she just responds with, you know, like over and over. And she just basically, I think she's trying to teach us to stop asking her to do things, like with her response, because we hate it so much. And then the other part is if we, you know, it's kind of like I hate to ask because I know that's the response I'm going to get. And so I'm thinking that, you know.
You think that's her goal, maybe?
Yeah, that might be part of her goal. And then kind of a similar component is if we try and have a conversation with her about something that is maybe a point of correction or something that she feels vulnerable about, she'll yell stop. She has these responses that I can tell she's using to try and get us to just not go there. So kind of in two different ways, that's the way that she stops us from intervening in her life in any way. So I think it's kind of two parts that we have to learn, my husband and I, maybe we can approach her in a different way, I don't know, but also teach her that if you're feeling, I don't know, insecure or threatened or something, that there's a better way to respond. So I think she could learn and we could probably learn as well.
Gotcha. So I'm going to ask you to narrow that down a bit. Remind me how old she is.
Okay. She's 9.
Okay. So in terms of taking aim, I think the change you want to see is her not reacting so violently to conversations or requests to help out.
Right. Yeah, just being, I don't know, maybe she just needs to change her expectation that we are going to ask things of her and we want to talk to her. So if maybe she's anticipating that these things are just a part of her normal day, there will be less of a response maybe. I don't it's kind of an everyday thing, so I'm not quite sure why every day it's, you know, the pushback.
Hey, or just every time?
Probably not every time. I think probably she reaches her limit at some point during the day where she's just done doing and talking.
That's fair.
I get that.
Okay. So how do you respond when that happens?
Usually I will just ignore that she answered me that way and just, you know, will say, well, you've got to put your shoes on anyway, let's go. And we just go. Instead of trying to fight with her about how she responded to me by, you know, yelling at me or whatever, it's just I try to ignore it. And usually eventually she'll do what she's supposed to do, and so that's it. My husband, he doesn't have as much patience for that, so he usually then will kind of blow up in response, and then we really get going. So I'd like to maybe stop the cycle of that somehow.
Yeah, yeah. No, I hear you. And that's very common. I'm thinking about a 9-year-old being able to say stop and express, you know, verbally she's at her limit. And I'm thinking that that's awesome because that's a difficult level of self-awareness, I think, you know, because if functionally we think that she's 3 to 5 years behind her same age peers, you know, she's really like at maybe 6.
Yeah.
She's reached her limit, you know, the fact that she's not melting down in a more physical way is pretty impressive. So she's still able, even if she's yelling it, and you'd prefer that she not yell. I mean, the fact that she's saying, hey, stop, I cannot handle this right now. This is too much. It's really impressive to me.
Now that you mentioned it, sure, that is actually sort of a celebration then, I guess, because she used to just respond physically. So at least we're making progress.
exactly. And that's such a great point because, you know, again, and we don't intentionally send negative messages to our kids. We probably do it a lot of the time without even realizing that we are. But if you look at anything around positive psychology, you know, we have to have 6 positive things to that one negative thing, and I am terrible at math, but if I try to think through the how many positive things I would need to tell each one of my kids every day to offset the one negative thing, I don't think I can ever hit that number, and it can be, you know, kind of frustrating. But just like everything else, the thing that you focus on grows or gets better, just like, you know, training a muscle. You know, if you look around and you see positive things everywhere, you see beauty everywhere, gratitude everywhere, then slowly over time, you know, you become more positive and it's easier for you to give more positive feedback and compliments to your child. Now, we don't want them to be disingenuous. We want them to be a valid compliment, focusing on their strengths. And that's, you know, once you start looking for the strengths, it makes it a whole lot easier, right? You know, our kids respond a whole lot better to the carrot rather than the stick. I'm not saying that in the moment, every now and then there might not be, or, you know, every now and then a kid will respond to yelling or a harsher form of punishment, but that's not going to be sustainable over time, and it makes everyone feel like crap later. And so, the carrot is definitely more motivating to the ADHD brain. You know, the stimulus, if you're looking for ways to activate the brain, you can see the yelling piece as an activation, or the ADHD brain searching for some way to engage and respond. But again, over time, it's not sustainable, and it can lead to all kinds of just yucky things later. So I'll just dive right into the teaching real quick, and then we can go back around. You know, when we're talking about being triggered too, let me just get that before we get too far in the positive parenting. It's hard to parent effectively when you're triggered. And we all get triggered. And sometimes it's not even about being able to prevent getting triggered. It's about what we do in the moment when we are triggered. We've talked about the 4 steps that we follow. And the first one is that you got to recognize and acknowledge that you're getting triggered, right? And if your kid is triggered too, then the best thing for you both to do is to take a time out and reclaim the brain. And I'm not talking about like, you know, go sit in your room type of time out, like a punishment type of time out. I'm talking about, you know, getting physically away from each other or, you know, walking around the house together or doing push-ups, drinking some water. You know, we've talked about the caveman brain before, and I still just love that there's a part of our brain that, as long as there's a source of water nearby, we just know in our genes that we're safe and we're going to be okay. And so there's something about drinking water in the heat of the moment that helps us calm down, believe it or not. I used to not believe that, but I've been doing that a lot lately. It actually doesn't work. Just cool. Let's see. So the other thing to remember is that, I mean, if you try to engage with your child while you're triggered or while they are triggered, it's going to be a mess. And it's actually where you can come back and they're like, okay, I'm calm now. I don't know, a minute and a half later that, okay, maybe I wasn't as calm as I thought I was. So we got to start over. So the third step is while you're either apart or once you get to a place of calm, think about the story that you're telling yourself, and then think about a story that you can also tell yourself that is true, but maybe frames things in a more positive manner. So for example, you know, what we were saying before about your daughter, if, you know, it's easy to say she's being disrespectful, she's angry and yelling all the time, and this is not the way that she should speak to her parents. That's one story, but the story that is also true and a little more positive, as we said, is that she's able to express the fact that she can't take anymore, and she doesn't know how else to get all these big feelings out other than to say stop. And so sometimes when we make that shift in our brain, sort of like the, you know, if we remember the 3 to 5 year developmental delay, or we remember that our children are not doing this to us just because they want to be jerks, it's that they really can't do it yet. It's not a matter of won't. When we can make that mental shift, things seem to get a lot better, and it's easier for us to come from a place of empathy and strength rather than from a place of anger and frustration. And so then we take action based on the new story. You know, you guys know this. It's hard to be a parent. And it's hard to not see our kids as reflections of us or extensions of us. And, you know, I think when our kids are melting down, it shines this big spotlight on some of the things that are going on in our own lives that may not feel good at the time. And then we get into that place of catastrophizing. So the good news is that when we get better in one area, we get better all around, so in all areas. And another way to do that is looking for the strength, you know. Positive parenting is about focusing on the strengths so that we can find solutions to the challenges that we're facing. And it's not just saying kind things, like we said, although, you know, it's important to be kind. In order to shift our expectations, we have to come from a place of positivity. And maybe that's making a list of all the good things. I know a lot of people who make a list every day of 5 things they're thankful for.
Sure.
Yeah. Oh, hello? I heard someone try to jump in. Okay. Is anyone on mute? No. I totally lost my train of thought. Gratitude list, I think, is where we were at. Excuse me. You know, and sometimes it's just looking around and seeing the beauty in an everyday situation. And sometimes it's allowing our kids to make mistakes and helping them see that it's not wrong to make a mistake. You know, that you don't need to feel judgment or shame if you make a mistake, because that's how we figure out the solution. You know, how are we going to figure out the way to make things work for you in terms of, you know, dinner or homework or sleep? If it's not okay to make mistakes and try things, and then when that thing doesn't work out, then we try something different. And no one's perfect. As long as we're open and transparent along the way, I think some of the most powerful moments in my parenting life have been when I've been able to say, I really don't know what the answer is, or I'm feeling really frustrated about this, and this is why I'm feeling frustrated, but I know it's okay, or it's going to be okay because of this. And, you know, allowing our kids to see us be vulnerable and to know that life isn't always positive and happiness and joy, but helping them to find ways to find the joy, so modeling that piece for them. So what's coming up for you guys as we're talking about parenting positively?
I don't think I'm on mute. So what's coming up for me is I have twin boys, and their level of loudness, screaming, jumping, flipping is it triggers my hit me down to the core, right? It's kind of like having somebody with an electric prod that just keeps prodding me. And so my impulse is to shut them down, but I know they need to learn. And I mean, I know like that's how they have to express, and they're not even hurting each other, but that is literally just how they play, and they play aggressively and rough. And so, my positive parenting practice recently is just kind of breathing through it. Like when I hear the scream, nobody died. When I hear the scream, nobody punched the other guy and knocked their teeth out. When I hear the scream, like that's where my mind goes, because I can't relate to that level of excitement, physical engagement. It's just not who I am. And and so I'm working really hard to understand that that's something they need, and they're not hurting each other. So how do I calm myself in the moment? That's how I'm, because what I want to do is stop them, you know, redirect them, get them into something calm, and it just doesn't work. So, Jeremy, I actually texted you a research paper that I'm in the middle of reading called Understanding Boys, and that's actually been really helpful. I sent it to you in text, so you have it for research. So just learning about that and seeing that they come by it honestly, and that the best thing I can do is learn to breathe through it.
Yes. That's awesome that you recognize that. I think, all of us probably in the heat of the moment or at some point during the day, you know, when our kids are just being kids and they're running around burning off excess energy, and then there's always, you know, usually it's one of my sons that can scream at a certain, like, level that just feels like nails on the chalkboard. And, of course, you know, your first inclination at mine is, but to recognize that, one, I'm getting triggered, and two, you know, the stress is really annoying me, and he's got to stop. But the story that's also true is what you just bring off energy, the way that boys connect, and they're, no one's dying, no one's being hurt, and that I'm the one who needs to change my reaction to that. And that doesn't mean that I may always be able to change my reaction to that. That may just mean I'm going to go to a different room. Put my headphones on for a little while so only the scream of death gets through.
And that is like a really scary proposition for me, because I grew up with three older brothers who did fight, but again, they never killed each other, but they did fight and they punched and, you know, and so I think that the child in me feels really helpless. And so I'm afraid to ignore it. It's just really hard. Like, I wish I could put the headphones on and ignore it, but instead I have to make myself, as the mother, slightly listen in case there is real danger.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I'm not saying you should, tune your children out or I'm just saying, you know, certainly if it's a situation where a child is getting repeatedly hurt or bullied or ganged up on, you know, that's not a healthy situation.
Yeah.
And I know sometimes with boys, it's hard to figure out where that line is. But boys do need to roughhouse. And I've, with their mother, sometimes with their dads or an uncle, there's a part of their brain that responds to that. And that is a needed piece in terms of growing up. But as a mother, and I have a brother who's 10 years younger than me, so I missed that whole piece of his roughhousing development. It is difficult to sometimes watch and separate, you know, is this healthy or not? So those are great points. What else is coming up, guys? Parenting positively. What are some things that are working for you or things you can be doing differently?
This is Jane. Can you hear me?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Oh, okay. I just took it off mute. I just think it's really good to hear this. It's exactly where I needed to be thinking more positively than, like I said, foreseeing the future of doom and gloom. So,
yeah.
Feels better, and the trigger a lot better. And I really, I want to comment on the drinking water, because I had no idea that that's
something that was helpful. And when my son was mm-hmm. about 14 or 15 and going through some of his worst times with a major depression and self-harm and everything, they did the, I don't know if you've heard of dialectical behavior therapy, but anyway, part of what he did, and I don't know if it was through that or through his own decision, but I mean, they try all these major interventions, but the thing that worked for him was to go down in the kitchen and drink a glass of water. So,
oh, how about that?
He said that worked. Yeah, and then even to this day, when he's upset, the first thing that now I'll do, I'll say, here, let me get you a glass of water.
So
the glass of water that really somehow, and I thought, how could this be helping? But I went with, okay, if he feels it helps, then give him a glass of water.
Yeah.
But you mentioned something about it, so I don't know what you were talking about.
It's a caveman thing, apparently. Yeah, it's a caveman thing. It goes back to, you know, the days of being early humans, and that, you know, if you didn't have water, you died, right? And so somehow it's been hardwired into our genes or our DNA that, you know, if we're close to a source of water, or if we're actually drinking water, our brain is able to calm down because it knows it's safe. And when you were just saying that, I was thinking about TV shows, you know, when someone's upset, or when someone, you know, when the police come to tell them horrible things, you know, the first thing someone does is, let me get you a drink of water to help you calm down. I had forgotten about that. Yeah. Yeah. So is there a way specifically in with your son for you to come from a place of, maybe it's a big stretch to get all the way to positivity, because I know you're frustrated, but a way to approach it at least from the idea that something else might be going on, or a story that is also true?
Oh, I was just trying to think about that, because I could think perfectly clearly for the other people when they had the story of what, how I could turn that into a positive. The boys are spirited and joyful. But for mine, you know, when he walks down and the first thing, you know, I know is that he didn't sleep the whole entire night, I'm triggered instantly. How could I tell myself another story about how is he going to get through today with, you know, having to do a research paper and go to school, and then I went to all the things, how's he going to do it with no sleep all night? And this is like the millionth time that this has happened. So I couldn't turn it around into another story. I mean, so if you don't sleep,
but he does it, right? Somehow he gets through the day, it sounds like, because he keeps doing it again and again.
Yeah, and that's what the problem is that he thinks it's okay. And that he makes it through the day. And guess why he makes it through the day? Because mom is there to save the day all the time.
Oh, you know what I'm going to say now, right? What would happen if you didn't save the day?
Okay, so that's where I always have to stop, because I cannot let him fail, because then those ideas of, okay, he is going to be, for one, he gets so disgusted with himself if he feels like he's ruining his life, then he blows up. And I don't want to have one of those explosions. And I don't want to just say, okay, I'm going to bed and I'm not helping you with any of that research paper, any of your homework, because you know what? You don't care, so I don't care. And then it's like, to me, all or nothing thinking, and I can't let him just like, think. So I keep helping and thinking, I'm going to help until he gets his high school diploma. Then I'll stop.
And how's that going to work out?
I don't know, but I'm in a vicious cycle.
So all you can change is you and your reaction to the situation. And what would a baby step look like? What's something little that you can change about either your reaction or the way that you approach the situation in your mind that can make a difference? Because even if just one of us changes, and even if just one of us changes a tiny bit, the entire dynamic has to shift. So things have to either get better or get worse, or shift in some way. Because when one person starts behaving differently, then the outcome is different. Whereas if you keep doing the same thing over and over, you keep getting the same response over and over. So what's a, you know, it's a,
too big of a leap, I think, to go from here to, you know, not supporting him at all, or, you know, to demand that he sleep at night instead of during the day, because mm-hmm. that's not the way that his brain is wired. And you know that 95% of people with ADHD struggle with sleep. So this is normal for him. What would a baby step look like for you? Maybe that is that it? Maybe just switching it in your head to know that this is a normal piece of ADHD? Or is there something bigger?
Okay. I think I do know this, the idea that I've read so much about, that it is one of the symptoms of the ADHD, but I guess I have that big but that I'm not supposed to have, is that while we've tried so many millions of things to help him, like the different melatonin or medications or sleep hygiene or whatever, and it seems like he's ignoring some of that to the suggestions because
so those are all changes that he's making or suggestions for yeah. ways to help him. What is something mm-hmm. that you can do to help you, or a mm-hmm. change that you can make in your mind or approach that will help you see the situation differently?
To see it differently.
You can think about it.
Just to say to myself that it's normal, and I didn't know about if it's that it was 90% have.
Yeah, 90% struggle with sleep. Yeah, in particularly teenagers. Because of the hormones.
To normalize it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To normalize it, maybe, that it's normal. I don't know. That's a baby step. So, yeah.
Do you think your anger is more about the sleep piece or the rescuing piece?
About the what
or
piece?
Or something different. The fact that you rescue him when he doesn't sleep.
The fact that I have fear that he's not going to be able to do what he needs to do to even succeed in life. I've taken it all the way to the future. How can he keep a job? You know, that kind of thing. So
mm-hmm.
How can he graduate? How can he do his work? Why doesn't he care? This is ridiculous. I go into a huge cycle of all of that. I've been in a really bad place, so that's why I joined.
Yeah, no, I'm glad you're here.
Maybe not to be triggered instantly or do something, and I did not catch the four steps. I only caught the fourth step. I didn't hear the first three. So I have to probably figure out the first three, what they were.
Oh, I can't wait to go back to those. I think you even have them down. Yeah, I mean, it's step one is recognizing and acknowledging that you're triggered. Step two is reclaiming your brain, drinking that water, or, you know, moving yourself physically from the situation. Identifying the story that you're telling yourself, and then reframing that story into something that's also true, but is more positive and comes from a place of empathy. And then step four is kind of acting on that story, right? When you're both calm and seeing if you can come from that place of empathy and figure out next steps.
Okay.
You know, I mean, there's nothing, I was thinking of thinking, you know, and setting up. Let's think about this a little bit so we can help, and then we'll circle back. Who else wanted to share about here? What were we talking?
I don't have a very good connection. I'm sorry, I missed a couple things.
No worries.
I'm having the same issue. It's kind of cutting out quite a bit. I thought it was just me.
Oh, it is?
Yeah, I thought it was just me, too.
Oh, I'm sorry, guys. Let me walk around. I'm in a different place than I usually am. It's probably me. Okay.
Can I ask a question on the son that's not sleeping, is it possible to have him do his work at nighttime? I like change his, go figure out his circadian rhythm and go with the, have him go ahead and stay awake and do whatever he needs to do at nighttime and let him sleep, come home and sleep after school. Like, is that unreasonable?
No, I did think about that. Thank you. And I suggested to him, and he said he started to do some work on his paper at like 6 a.m. So,
oh, there you go.
I think the video game is more enticing now.
Oh, God, yeah.
Well,
you got to get rid of that. You
got to
get
rid
of that.
Yeah, and I know he's 18, and I know, and maybe this conversation we need to have offline.
But in your house, you can shut off the power grid. If he's living under your roof, maybe the power grid shuts off at nighttime and he doesn't have a choice but to do whatever, you know. Yeah. So, sorry, that's probably too instructive. But that would be.
Oh, we thought of that. And we definitely could do that. And we know that's an option of cutting off to his room. But
sure.
The reaction and the huge consequence of that, and there's a lot more to it with not having friends, and so that's the way he has friends. It's just difficult to instill a punishment at this point than to try to, like, come from it from a positive parenting point of view. I'm trying to circumvent the punishment phase.
No, it's a challenge for sure. And I think, you know, specific to what's happening with your son, that's probably something that we can kind of work through. We can work through it together, obviously. But maybe you and I can talk briefly either after the call or next week, too, to kind of come up with some ideas there.
Okay.
So we're getting close to the top of the hour, and I always hate to cut people short or, you know, in the call before people have a chance to check out. And so look at the questions that we ask at the end of every session. They are, what did I focus on or pay most attention to today? What's my clarity or my takeaway from today? What's a realistic action step for me to take? And how do I set myself up for success with this action? So I'd love it if everybody could do a checkout or at least a piece of a checkout. So just jump in when you're ready.
I can go. This is Debbie. I can, so my, the, you know, zooming out, and in that idea of zooming out, create distinction between what's boy energy, what's ADH energy, and what my expectations are, and see that as the whole versus being mired in it all being one. So that's my action step, is to really look at and understand the differences for myself.
I like that. Who's next?
This is Mary. I think my aha is just when you said that, you know, her saying no is an expression that she has feelings that she can't express any other way. And so I think if I remind myself of that and remind myself of how far we've come, because we have come so far that it's just yelling no at us instead of throwing a fit for hours. That is a huge step. Like, our lives are so much better, so much better. And so I think if I remind myself of that, I am going to come at her with a lot more grace and patience. And if I remind my husband, like, can you believe, you know, and I'm not even correcting him, but just saying, on a regular basis, like pointing out to him how far she's come, he has a lot more grace and patience when I remind him of those things. And then an action step might also be that if she yells back, is maybe to help her find her words for it, to say, like, are you feeling like attacked right now? Or do you feel embarrassed? And maybe starting to help her recognize what the emotion is, instead of, you know, just continuing to harp on what I want her to do, but, like, pause
and help her maybe start to identify her emotion, and eventually she'll be able to express it better.
Oh, I like that. Yeah, definitely in the heat of the moment. That's hard to do, really.
Right. But no, I mean, as you already know, if you're,
continuing to ask her to do something when she's already triggered, it's just going to get worse. So, I think sometimes, too, it's helpful to keep, like, a trigger journal and see if you can figure out, what situations trigger her, like what number of questions, if you get to the fifth question, is that the one or the fifth, So, I mean, ideally, you'd be able to create a framework of communication where she's not getting triggered. And so the first step for you is to identify the situations where she seems to get triggered the most, and then see how you can shift that framework. But that's great.
And have a bottle of water with me when we do that. So that's good.
There you go.
We'll try the water.
We're all going to be so well hydrated.
Yeah.
Cool. Thanks, Mary. All right, we got time for one or two more.
Hey, it's Gretchen. I just feel like my action step is to, one, like, pause and ask myself, like, is this really something I need to go after or not, right? Like, is this so important to me or is it just not? And so I think I'm certainly going to use the water idea as part of that if I feel really fired up. But I think, like, just in general, just kind of stopping and saying, like, is this kind of like my gut reaction, or do I really want to practice this? And I guess, like, the piece that stuck with me was, like, exercising a muscle. Like, I feel like I'm exercising this thing I don't want to be strong, and I just need to kind of think about, like, I guess I'm trying to say, like, pick my battles, but really think about which battles I'm trying to pick, because some of them, sure, but a lot of them I just don't even think need to be there, and I think I'm creating a good amount of negativity and, like, I'm going to say conflict even, just because of that. And I think that'll help a lot, actually. And you just said trigger journal, and I wrote it down because I'm like, I need a trigger journal for myself.
Cool.
it was just like a post-it note. It's cool, and then I can just kind of look at it and be like, raisins. And you know what I mean? And, like, the silly things and, like, what was going on. And I think I'm going to take a look at that as well.
Yeah. Oh, I love that. Yeah. What is it about that battle that's triggering you,
Because I think I'd have a pretty ridiculous list, but I think there's more to it than that. You know what I mean? And so that's what I'm getting at.
Probably. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. There's something behind that. And I don't know what it is. But yeah, I think it's interesting to keep the trigger journal and just kind of look to see what patterns are there. And then try to think about where that might come from. And that's certainly something we can work through on a call also. Cool. All right, one more checkout, and then we're going to have to wrap it up, guys. Sorry.
Okay, this is Jane, and I'll say that what I focused on most today was being positive instead of negative, and my clarity or takeaway is, thanks, what I focus on will grow. That resonated with me, like a muscle focus on will grow, and that I want to figure out a place of empathy to figure out my next steps. So that should be way more positive way to look at it. And the realistic action step, to take baby step and to acknowledge that the sleep problem for ADHD children is normal, and to set myself up for success, I put to read my notes from today.
Oh, good. Cool.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Awesome. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, does anybody have a last burning thing to share before we wrap it up? We have 1 minute left. All right, guys. Great, fabulous work today. Have a wonderful weekend, and I'm looking forward to talking to you in a couple weeks.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.